Monster Movie Media presents.
Hey, this is Leonard Kinsey, author of The Dark Side of Disney and owner of Bamboo Forest Publishing, and you're listening to Creepy Kingdom. And I'm really creeped out right now.
Welcome to episode 21 of the Creepy Kingdom podcast. A podcast all about the creepiness of the Disney films and theme parks. I am your host, Mr. James H. Carter II. And happy Maleficent Day or week, depending on when you're listening to this or listening to this way in the future. So happy Maleficent Life. But it is being released on the day Maleficent hits theaters. And as of the time of this recording, I haven't seen it yet. But by the time you're listening to this, I should have. So, but we'll talk about that in the future. Just wanted to make acknowledgement. Coming up on this episode, author of The Dark Side of Disney, Leonard Kinsey, comes on the show to talk about several things, including his brand new book, Hapst in the Disney Saboteurs. But before we get into that, just want to let you know that I was recently on the Universal Now podcast. It's episode 54. I was on with several other people talking about very random topics. Mostly Universal, obviously. But if you would like to listen to a show that has me randomly chime in with a witty comment every few minutes, then check it out. You can find that at universal-now.com. And without any further ado, let's begin. Alrighty, I am here with author Leonard Kinsey. Hello.
Hey, how you doing, James?
Pretty good. How are you doing?
I'm great. I'm happy to be here.
Thanks for coming on the show.
I bet.
So, we actually have a lot to talk about, because this is your first appearance on the show.
It is. I've listened to every episode, and I'm excited to be on, so this is great.
Well, awesome. Thanks for listening.
I bet. I really like the Stacey J one. You know, I'm kind of a big fan of hers.
Right.
In a few different ways. But that was it. That was a good episode.
Oh, thank you. No, it was lovely of her to come on the show and do homework.
Yeah, yeah, definitely.
Quite a commitment she has to the fans.
She's pretty cool.
Yeah, that was fun. So, let's talk about a little bit about your first book, The Dark Side of Disney. So what inspired you to write that book? And give a little overview of what that's about in case someone is unfamiliar.
The Dark Side of Disney is a travel guide unlike any other Disney travel guide that you're going to read. It's basically, I describe it as the anarchist cookbook of Disney travel guides. So it's all the tips, tricks, and scams that Disney probably doesn't want you to know about, and that you're just not going to find anywhere else. And the idea behind that was that, you know, I was going to Disney. I hadn't been in a while, and then I started going back a lot more often, and you know, obviously realized how much more expensive it was than I remembered, and. You know, but I wanted to do it upright. I wanted to stay in the nice places, and I wanted to eat at the nice places. And so the more I went, recently, the more I started remembering all these things that I used to do as a kid and a teenager to kind of save money, and a lot of those things were still in effect, like free parking or, you know, doing things like going to the resorts and just hanging out without spending money on park tickets, and just a lot of things like that that I'd kind of forgotten about. So I started writing tip sheets for myself and for others, and I would give them to other people who were in similar situations to mine, and they'd go to the park with these sheets of tips and would come back and be really, really thrilled about how great all that worked out. And so that, combined with all these stories that I had from when I was younger about all the crazy stuff I used to do in Disney, like going down to the Utilidors and, you know, bringing dates to the resorts and doing various things with them. So it's things like that that people really seem interested in hearing, combined with the fact that every time I went, I'd look for some tour guide that would kind of give me, you know, tips that I didn't know about or tips that maybe I could use. And they just, there weren't any. There were no travel guides that had anything to do with the sort of vacation that I wanted to have at Walt Disney World. And because I don't have kids, you know, I like to have some cocktails throughout the day. And none of the travel guides had anything to do with any of that. So I just decided for my own benefit just to write my own and put it out there. And it turned out that there were lots of other people like me out there who were also wanting that sort of vacation. And so the book ended up selling incredibly well.
Wow, that's awesome. That last point I really wanted to bring up was that it seemed that there was a lot of like-minded people out there that kind of were shunned by the regular Disney community for what they're into or whatever. And your book really helped bring them out of the woodwork and be like, oh no, there's a community of people that, you know, want to do things their own way, that are, you know, they're not pixie dusters, if you will.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, at the time, you know, Disboards was kind of the only real meeting place for people who were liked Disney to go and talk about it. And I got banned from there, I think, the first day that I joined. And that happened over and over again. And eventually, what was really cool is when the book came out, all these little kind of non-pixie duster communities started coming out, and they all had the book in common. They could all, you know about the Dark Side Disney? Yeah. You like it? Yeah. Oh, okay. Well, you're cool then. Right, you know, it's kind of shorthand for people knowing if they were going to be able to relate to someone else as far as the kind of Disney vacation or kind of Disney fan that they were. So, yeah, I mean, I definitely can't take credit for all that, but I do think it was a common unifier,
right,
for sure.
Yeah, so that's something I really appreciate about the book.
Yeah, I mean, someone like you, you know, I met you recently at that event that we had at Atomic Books, and you know, that's the sort of event that just wouldn't have happened years ago, you know, and you knew everyone there who showed up was going to be a like-minded individual, you know, adult Disney fans who kind of maybe liked some of the alternative stuff a little bit and weren't pixie dusters. And it's a comfortable environment because you know you're not going to get, you know, banned or yelled at or right, whatever.
Or judged.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that's super cool. Like, that sort of thing really makes me happy. That makes writing the book worth it.
Yeah, I mean, I want to get to that event a little bit later, but I can't think of any place that I physically go that I felt as comfortable as just talking to whoever and just being around than that event, because it was just, you know, I'm constantly having to explain to people why I like Disney, or they don't really understand, or they're shocked, or they don't have their own preconceived notions of what they think that I like or whatever it is.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yep, I agree.
And she does not have to do that. That was amazing, but
definitely.
One of the things in the book, I thought was funny or amusing, which really hit home for me, was you're talking about ways to save money on tickets, which I think kind of the end result is a really is not a way to do it unless you're willing to put yourself through lots of misery and pain.
Yeah. Yep.
Which was the timeshare sales meetings.
Yeah.
Now, I've never done it, but I have been bombarded with opportunities. And it's hard. It's hard right there. And I'm just like, my BS meter is going off when they're talking to me, but they're talking about free tickets. But eventually I just said, I just have to give them the, I'll let you know later. So they let me get away from them.
Yeah. Well, I mean, and that's the pitch, to just show up to the timeshare pitch, that when you're actually there, it's a million times worse.
Yeah.
And you know, like I say in the book, that's just not what I want to do when I'm on vacation. It's just a bad experience, and I ended up, you know, wasting a whole day of vacation for park tickets, essentially, that I you know, should have just bought, and it was not a good experience. So I definitely don't recommend doing those timeshare presentations to get cheap tickets. Now, there are ways to get cheaper tickets through someplace like Undercover Tourist with the Mouse Savers link. There are a few other ways that you can. Obviously, if you live in Florida, you can get cheaper tickets.
Right.
But there's some other things you could do. That I've got some tips that I haven't even given away myself that I used this day. And you know, I don't know if they're easily accessible through Google, but that's one of the things about the book. It's people always assume that most of the book is about scamming Disney, and it's not. Most of the book is protecting people from being scammed by all the crap around Disney.
Right.
And so, and again, these are things that weren't covered in other tour guides. Like, none of the other tour guides say, don't go to these timeshare presentations. None of the other tour guides say, don't buy these tickets from these little stands that say, you know, cheap Disney tickets. They just act like those things don't even exist.
Yeah, true.
Which is the whole pixie duster mentality to begin with. It's like, pretend that nothing bad exists.
Right.
But that's not the case. Like, so when I talk about tips, tricks, and scams, I'm not necessarily talking against Disney. I'm talking about stuff that could be perpetrated against regular tourists. And this is stuff that people need to know about, just for their own safety and security, and, you know, not to get ripped off, essentially.
Very, very true. So, I mean, because it's information not everyone is ready to hear. So that's why only the elite that read your book get to know about it.
Exactly.
So did you get any kind of response from Disney, one that you could talk about on the show?
No, I've never gotten any official response from Disney. So that's good. I'm okay with that. But I have heard, through the grapevine that some managers have bought copies of the book to hand out to their staff, so to help their staff more easily kind of identify scammers or people who are
wow.
doing bad things in the parks, or, so that's kind of cool. And
that's amazing.
I hear from, yeah, it's awesome. And I hear from cast members all the time, you know, at least once a week from a cast member who's just like, I love your book, you know, and so that's really neat. And I've got a ton of cast member friends, and so, yeah, nothing official from the Disney company, but from people within Disney, yeah, I've heard a ton. And to the point where I've walked around the parks before and had people, cast members, stop me when I'm getting off a ride and go, hey, I really like your book. You know, just things like that.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, it's really neat.
So from this book, I don't know if it's from it or I don't know when you decided to do this, but eventually you have started Bamboo Forest Publishing. Was this a result of the book, or was this the plan all along?
No. Well, I mean, I started it just as, because you got to have a publishing company to be taken seriously, essentially. And they ask you what it is when you're typing it in on Amazon to put it up for sale.
Right.
But I had no real intention of releasing another book, because I had no idea how this one was going to sell. I would have been happy. I think my goal at the time was that if I had sold 2,000 copies, that would be like a major success. And I think some other people had sold about that much. And I was like, wow, that's great. Like, I could really use that money right now. So, and it went on to sell 30,000 plus copies. That's almost probably up to 40,000 at this point. So,
wow.
So when I realized how successful it was and how there was a definite market for this sort of material, I was like, well, I really enjoyed writing it, so why don't I just keep doing it? And I'd learned a lot by self-publishing, and I'd kind of gotten together a good team of editors and layout designers and cover artists and stuff like that. So that's when I wrote Our Kingdom of Dust, which is a fiction book about kind of, people who are super obsessed with Disney and kind of use it to escape from the problems in their real life. And they're all on this drug called the dust, which is like pixie dust. And that drug makes them feel like they do in the parks, even when they're not in the parks. So they've all got these major problems, but they're running away from them by escaping in this fantasy world. So, and that was very well received, very well critically received. And around that time, Ron Schneider was releasing his book, and his book From Dreamer to Dreamfinder. And he was the person who played the Dreamfinder in Epcot and kind of built up that character as far as the live character went in the parks. And so I'd been reading his blog and really decided at this point that I really wanted to keep publishing these sort of Disney books, and met up with him and we struck a deal, and I released his book, and it was also very well received. And got together with Jeff Heimbach from Mice Chat Community Core Weekly, and he had done a book with Rolly Crump. He was having trouble getting out, which sounds really weird in retrospect.
Yeah.
Rolly Crump, a famous Imagineer who worked with Walt Disney, was having trouble getting his book published.
Wow.
Well, I should say he was having trouble getting his book published in a form that would do his long career justice. I mean, he's an artist, so obviously you'd want to show his art in the book, but a lot of these people just wanted it to be a regular text thing with no photos. And if you've seen the book, that wouldn't have made any sense. I mean, it still tells great stories, but seeing his art along with the stories really brings everything to life. So so Jeff had really liked what I'd been doing, came to me and said, can you do this right? And I was like, sure, I guess. I'd never done anything like it before, but we'll make it work. And we did, and it turned out great. And it's kind of a cute story. So, and it's, that was between that and Ron's book, it really kind of added, or it kind of gave Bamboo Forest Publishing some legitimacy. It wasn't just some crazy, guy named Leonard Kinsey who was, just running around like a maniac. It was actually real people who had actually contributed to the history and the legacy of the Disney company.
Right.
And who had intelligent things to say about the Disney company and about Walt Disney himself. And so that was really cool. And right about that time is when once I realized that I was now this kind of legitimate publisher, is when I said, okay, so now I need to stop, backstage exploring and stop, all these kind of bad boy type things that I'd been doing, because they were going to reflect negatively on Rolly and Ron, which was not something I wanted. So I kind of stopped doing that and went legit.
Wow.
Yeah.
I guess you got to do that when you have, when you're putting out Rolly Crump's book.
I respected them so much that I didn't want anything that I did to reflect badly on them. So, again, that was just a pure matter of respect.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's awesome. So, you mentioned Our Kingdom of Dust. I wanted to talk to you a little bit about that.
Cool.
So, this book was fiction, as you gave a little synopsis of it. Was this the first fiction book that you've written?
Yeah, it was. So I'd taken a lot of creative writing classes in college, and I'd won a few awards for fiction that I'd written in high school even. Most of those were all short stories, so I'd never written a full-length piece of fiction. It was, I'd get three chapters in and then that would be it. I'd never finish it. But something about this one, I don't know. When I actually took a week off work, and I sat down, I get up every morning just the same time as I would when I'd go into work normally, my day job, and just start writing. And I'd write all day and into the night, and And by the end of that week, I had finished the book.
Wow.
And it was something about just living with those characters and having them be so real for that week that really put me into that kind of zone where they had kind of taken over and they were real and they were doing what they would be doing. And it was almost like it was writing itself. So that was a really cool experience.
That's awesome. Yeah, that's once you kind of fall in love with your characters, they start doing things without you having to think of it, I guess is what you're saying.
Yeah, exactly. And the characters in that book are also unique, and they're all very damaged in different ways. So it was easy for me to fall in love with them, like you said. And they're all the kind of people that you meet when you end up associating with these Disney fans.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, one thing about Our Kingdom of Dust and your new book, which we'll be talking about shortly, is your attention to Walt Disney World detail is impeccable.
Thank you.
And I feel that really makes it real, almost. Like, it helps, I mean, more than a lot of books I read, that really, I don't read too much fiction, I mostly read nonfiction, but when I do read fiction, you know, it's hard to picture a lot of things and you kind of start making it up and then it's not real, it's just a story. But the detail that you put about where the people are, what they think about where they are, is so real that it just makes it makes the story so much more just engaging, because the things they're doing are so ridiculous, the things they're saying are so outrageous that it's like wow, these are all really crazy people that must be real because they're talking about this place that I know very well, you know, like, and yeah. I would say that's quite the draw for Disney fans that you have there.
Yeah, I agree. And you know, I could be writing a story set in, you know, downtown Manhattan or something, or you know, or some little podunk town that no one's ever heard of. But there's something about Disney World. I know it like the back of my hand. I could probably walk through it, you know, those parks blindfolded just because I was born and raised there and have been so many times. So in that respect, it's very easy for me to conjure settings in my mind. But also, it's a place that so many other people are so familiar with. And so in that respect, it creates kind of this common setting that we can all relate to. Mm-hmm. And it gives me the freedom to, yeah, kind of set some crazy stories in motion, because you know this place and you know these settings, and it's a neat sandbox to play in. It's not quite fan fiction, but it's almost like fan fiction in that respect, because these aren't characters that you know and love, but it's settings that you know and love, and the setting itself almost becomes a character in the story.
Right. So, sure. We mentioned it briefly before. You held an event at Atomic Books in Baltimore and about a month ago, April 2014, if you're listening to this in the future. So, I want you to explain a little bit what this event was about.
The event was kind of the book release for my newest book, Hapst and the Disney Saboteurs. And so I went there, and people got it a week before it came out to the public, and I did a signing and did a reading from it, and we also screened Philip Swift's documentary about Celebration Florida called The Bubble, and made an announcement about the documentary that he wants to make based off of The Dark Side of Disney. And so it was a pretty exciting night, had a good crowd show up, and I really enjoyed myself.
Yes, that was a lovely evening, as I've said many times. And Atomic Books is a pretty cool place within itself. The bookstore, I guess it's been there since, what, the 80s at least, right?
Yeah, in different locations, but right within two blocks of that location. And it's kind of a Baltimore establishment. And Ben Ray is kind of the guy who owns it. Has been the voice of culture, I guess, for kind of the Baltimore underground for a long time now. And they recently put a bar in back, and they carry an excellent selection of microbrew beers. So that was really cool, because once the event was over, we all just kind of adjourned to the bar and hung out and drank. And then when they shut down, we just walked down two doors and went to another bar and hung out and right. talked. So, yeah, it was neat.
Yeah, no, that was a fun night. That was... it's funny because the immediate thought is like, oh, I want those to happen more often. But it's whenever you have a really, really fun night and you try to duplicate it, it seems like it's hard to recapture the magic, I guess. I don't know.
No, I mean, I agree with you. You know, we had one there a few years back for our Kingdom of Dust. And actually, that went really well, too. And that was a lot of fun. I think we actually do need to have more kind of Mid-Atlantic, Northeast Disney fan meetups. And I know, like, the Disney hipsters did one a while back that I think was pretty successful. I think there's a big call for that. And, you know, D23 does events where they kind of have a roaming type of thing. But I don't know. I'm not big into that. I think that if we organized some, or someone, not necessarily we, but organized something more like this sort of event... that we could probably, you know, people would show up and really start to enjoy themselves. And we're doing something kind of similar. Well, no, it's not similar, but it's a similar sort of gathering, like the Kingdom Cast, the Walt Disney World Kingdom Cast podcast. Those guys sometimes do events, and in a few weeks they're doing a Busch Gardens Williamsburg event. So where a bunch of people are going to go meet up there. It's probably the closest thing to World Showcase that there is in the Mid-Atlantic region. So everyone's in there. They're actually, Busch Gardens Williamsburg is having their own food and wine festival, which is interesting and very, actually extremely similar to Epcot's. Yeah, I mean, there are meetups like that. I think there need to be more of them, because I do have a lot of fun in them.
Well, let's try to keep it going.
Yeah, definitely.
I guess the really fun, we're off the D23 events, and I've never been to any of those, but it still seems like it's like there's rules, like it's I don't know, like not a, I don't mean by rules, but it's just not a free environment. It's not a fun, you know what I'm saying? I don't know.
No, it wasn't. I mean, I went to the Epcot 30th one, and you know, it was basically everyone sitting in a room all day watching presentations. You know. The before and after stuff was more fun than the actual event was. I mean, the event was very informative and well done, but it wasn't this kind of gathering of fans out just having a good time sort of thing.
Right. I guess there's I feel like there's an air of pretension, a pretentiousness in the air or something at those kind of events.
Well, there definitely is. You know, and I've told this story before. Ron Schneider was on the panel for... they were doing kind of a retrospective of the Imagination Pavilion, and they basically told him, well, he wanted to promote his book, obviously,
right?
And he wanted them to show the cover on the screen. They had two big screens, and they absolutely refused to do that. And they said, well, and you're not even allowed to mention it. Don't mention your book. We don't want to support anything that Bamboo Forest is putting out, and we don't want to support anything that Leonard Kinsey is doing. And Ron was like, okay. So the best thing was, he went up there, he's doing his thing. I think he mentioned the book maybe four different times, and very blatantly so, as in like, and here's my book, and you can go buy it on Amazon. It's from Bamboo Forest Publishing, which was awesome. And you know, I obviously always knew Ron was a cool guy, but just the fact that he did that really... was totally kick ass.
Yeah.
But yeah, so you're right. So it's like they're stuffy, you know, they're very pixie dusterish. And I get it, because they have to appeal to a wide audience. But I still don't think they quite understand what their audience is. And I think that's been a problem with D23 since the beginning, is that they don't really understand who they're selling to. And who they're selling to is, you know, basically 1980s Epcot fans, if you want to boil it down to the bottom. You know, that's those people, that age group, that interest group are, I think, their core market, not pixie dusters as much. So. And they still don't get that, so, yeah.
Well, that's, we gotta take it upon ourselves.
Exactly, yep.
Well, let's play a clip from the event of you reading a chapter from your new book.
Great.
It was the smell of death and peppermint that had first brought Haps to Charlie Walker's attention. Everyone in the company had heard of Charlie, of course. His single-handed takedown of a terrorist organization that had planned to kill a bunch of people on Space Mountain was legendary. But Haps hadn't met the guy in person. He tried to avoid anyone from security whenever possible. So he wasn't exactly thrilled when his supervisor told him he'd been summoned to Charlie's office above Main Street. "Why do I need to go exactly?" asked Haps. "Don't ask questions, just go," said his supervisor. "Okay, but why?" "That information is on a need-to-know basis, and you don't need to know." "That's ridiculous. I mean, I'm going to find out when I get there, right?" "Maybe you will, maybe you won't." "You don't actually have any idea why he called me up there, do you?" "Sure I do." "Okay, so tell me then." "Now." "Yes." "Shut the f*** up and get your ass to security, Haps." "You shut up." "You're fired." "Does that mean I don't have to go to security?" "No, go to security, then you're fired." "So if I don't go, I won't be fired?" "No, you're fired either way." "So what's the point in me going then?" "Haps, get your ass to security. I promise I won't fire you if you just go now." "Okay, I guess I'll go then." "Thank you, Christ." So Haps trudged slowly through the utilidors to Main Street, took the stairway up to building MO5, and knocked on Charlie's door. "Come in," said a strong voice. Haps opened the door and walked into a windowless, threadbare office. The walls were yellow-painted concrete blocks, completely devoid of any art, photos, certificates, or awards. Charlie's desk was only slightly less bare. On it were an ancient HP Pavilion desktop, a phone, an air freshener shaped like a Mickey waffle, and a single-frame photo that faced toward the famous detective.
"Close the door behind you," said Charlie. Haps closed the door. "Take a seat," said Charlie. Haps sat. "You're Reginald?"
"Haps." Charlie looked over at his computer monitor, squinted, and turned back to Haps.
"Okay, Haps. Do you know why I've called you here?"
"No, but whatever it is, I didn't do it."
Charlie nodded and looked back at his computer.
"Seems like you've received a lot of reprimands for being caught in backstage areas that you're not authorized to be in."
"That's not true." "No point in lying, Haps. I might be new, but I'm not stupid. It's all right here in front of me," said Charlie, pointing to the screen. "You definitely have a long list of reprimands."
"Oh, yeah, that part is true. I just meant the part about not being authorized to be there. I'm a janitor. I'm pretty much authorized to be wherever there's dirt."
"That's an interesting leap of logic. Says here you were caught on the roof of Columbia Harbor House last week."
"Yeah. The roof was dirty."
"It also says that the security officer who caught you claimed that the whole area reeked of marijuana."
"I had bad gas."
"Your gas smells like marijuana?"
"Apparently."
"Uh-huh. Okay, look, enough of this nonsense."
"Yeah, I agree. Enough of this nonsense. Enough."
Charlie stared at Haps. Haps smiled. Charlie sighed. "Look, the fart talk is surprisingly apropos here. Guest Services has recently received numerous complaints of a strange smell on Main Street. More specifically, the smell of a dead animal. At first it was just dismissed as a rat that had died in an event somewhere, but apparently it's getting worse."
"Oh yeah, I totally smelled that last night."
"You did? Well good, because I need you to help me track it down."
"Huh? What do you care? I don't see why this has anything to do with security. And why me? Anyone in custodial should be able to find a dead rat in an event."
"No, I don't think so. I think it's going to be a little more difficult than that. I have a hunch about the smell, and I need someone who knows every nook and cranny of this place to help me track it down. When I contacted custodial with that very request, your supervisor immediately recommended you."
"Wait, so now it's a good thing that I'm always sneaking around backstage?"
"I don't know if that's the right way to look at it, but..."
"Yeah, see, that's not cool, man. You can't be punishing me for something one second and then telling me it's an asset to the company the next. Make up your mind already."
"Fair enough. How about this? If you help me find where that smell is coming from, I'll wipe those reprimands off your record. Not only that, but I'll tell my staff that as long as you're employed with the company, they are not to detain you if you're found backstage. Even if I'm found somewhere that smells like marijuana farts? Even if you're found somewhere that smells like marijuana farts. You've got yourself a deal. Hap stood up and shook Charlie's hand. Great, said Charlie. Now let's find out where that smell is coming from. Meet me at the hub at midnight. You got it, boss, said Haps. That night, Haps met Charlie at the hub, the Magic Kingdom's Central Plaza. Thanks for coming, said Charlie. Wouldn't miss it for anything, said Haps. Most of the reports say the smell is strongest at the beginning of Main Street near the railroad station. Yeah, that's where I smelled it. Okay, good. So let's just start walking down Main Street, and maybe between the two of us we can determine a point of origin. You take the west side, and I'll take the east side. Got it. Haps crossed over to the right, Charlie crossed to the left, and they both walked slowly down Main Street, noses in the air. I smell cookies, said Charlie. That's the Main Street Bakery, said Haps. They pipe in the smell through vents at the bottom of the shop using a contraption called a smellitzer. It's supposed to draw people into the bakery to buy... Interesting, said Charlie. They continued on, past the alley that dead-ended at Charlie's office, past the defunct Main Street Cinema, and past the main entrance to the Emporium. As they neared the end of the street, Charlie held up a finger. There. Smell that? Haps crossed the street to where Charlie was standing. He sniffed. Yeah. Smells like a dead animal and peppermint? Haps turned and looked up. The Main Street Confectionery, of course. Of course what? Asked Charlie. Another smell it, sir. It pumps out a peppermint scent all day. Haps ran over to the edge of the building and got on his hands and knees. What are you doing? Asked Charlie. Looking for the vent, said Haps. Crawled a few more feet, stopped, and pointed to a 6-inch round metal-screened hole, painted the same color as the trim around it. There it is. Haps put his nose up to it, sniffed, and recoiled. Oh, man, that's awful. Charlie bent down, sniffed, and also recoiled. Death and peppermint, he said. Not a pleasant combination. Okay, so where's the smellitzer that's pushing this scent out? Downstairs. Well, either way. Haps led Charlie backstage and into the utilidors. It smells terrible down here, said Charlie. Yeah, that's the way it always smells, said Haps. Like rotting garbage. They walked to the location directly under the Main Street Confectionery. Let's see, said Haps. If I remember correctly, the smellitzer is in an unmarked door right over... Oh, yeah, here it is. Haps yanked at the door. It wouldn't budge. It's locked, said Haps. Damn it, said Charlie. Oh, that's okay. I've got a full set of master keys right here. He pulled out a large ring of at least 2 dozen keys. What the hell, Haps, said Charlie. You shouldn't have those. Why not? Locks don't stop dirt, man. I got a job to do, right? No, 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 no. Damn it, you should not have those. But I bet you're glad I do right about now, though, huh? Asked Haps, picking a key from the chain, inserting it into the door and turning. The lock clicked. Haps turned the handle and pulled open the door. The stench knocked them both to the ground. Haps vomited. Charlie stood, held his arm over his nose, and walked into the small room, which was barely bigger than a closet. Inside was a machine with a fan, which was hooked to a large steel drum on the floor. Haps walked in, his shirt wrapped around his nose and mouth, and pointed to the drum. It's in the barrel, Charlie. Whatever is causing the smell is in there with the peppermint scent. Charlie nodded and walked over to the drum. Give me your key ring, he said to Haps. Haps threw him the keys. Charlie took one and used it to pry open the lid of the drum. The lid fell to the floor with a loud clang, and Haps jumped. Charlie slowly leaned forward and peered into the drum. Jesus, he said, jolting back. What's in there, Charlie? Asked Haps, inching toward the drum. Get out of here, Haps, said Charlie, waving him away. You don't need to see this. Why? What is it? I'm going to need a list of every smellitzer in Walt Disney World. Damn it, Charlie, what's in the drum? Charlie shook his head and slumped against the wall. We found one of our missing cast members. After that evening, Haps didn't see much of Charlie. Not for a while, anyway. But in the following weeks, he heard through the grapevine that 2 more cast members had been found in smellitzer drums. One in the burning Rome barrel in Epcot's Spaceship Earth, and one in the stink bug barrel in Animal Kingdom's It's Tough to Be a Bug. From what little info Haps was able to gather, it was only after Charlie posted security 24/7 at every Smelitzer site throughout the resort that a face character was apprehended dragging a dead body into a room that housed the orange scent in Sorin. But as hard as Haps tried, he couldn't find any further details about the case. Nobody knew for sure who the dead cast members were. Rumors swirled around the break rooms, but there was so much turnover in the company that it was impossible to attribute any unexplained absences to anything malicious. And certainly, none of the low-level grunts that Haps hung out with had any leads on who the murderer was, much less what their motive might have been. Charlie eventually refused to even acknowledge the existence of the dead body they'd found together. He told Haps it was a raccoon, and that Haps must have heard him wrong. In the end, the entire thing was covered up so tightly that nobody even seemed to remember it had happened. But hell, Charlie had kept his end of the bargain and had given Haps free rein of Walt Disney World. As long as he was a cast member, he could go backstage, smoke up wherever he wanted, and not get hassled by security. So, even though some of the stuff Charlie was investigating seemed ultra shady, and the way he went about his job was a little too black ops for Haps' taste, the dude was pretty okay in his book. So that's kind of the background of the characters, and that actually comes midway through the book, but hopefully gives you an idea of the tone and feel of the book. Better not be stingy or your nightmares will
come true. So, that chapter, that was just a random chapter. That wasn't the first chapter, right?
No, it's like midway through the book. The book's not necessarily linear.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, there is a linear story going on, but there's flashbacks to things and kind of sidetrack to things, and they all eventually come together in the end. Like at the time, why is this chapter in here about this weird Walt Disney urban legend? Or why is there this weird chapter in here about digital currency? But in the end, you totally understand why all those things were in there.
Right. So is there a reason that you chose that chapter in particular? Or do you not want... Is it a spoiler if you tell it?
No, I just think it's fun. I think that's a fun chapter. And, you know, it's... I think the good... one of the things I enjoy in the book is the interaction between Charlie Walker and Habst. They're obviously two totally different types of people who still really like each other for some reason or another. And their dynamic is a lot of fun. So I wanted to put that in there. And then there's also, you know, this kind of air of mystery around this the story of the missing cast members, and it's kind of a gruesome discovery that they make that's pretty shocking. And you never really get the full story about what went on there. And I'm hoping that story will come out in, you know, some other book or short story or whatever ways down the line.
Oh, so, yeah, it's kind of like, I think you mentioned this during the clip, it may or may not, but it seems like you are kind of building a fictional universe where lots of things cross over between your fiction books and the other book that you released, Hollow World.
Yeah, exactly. So Nick Poberski wrote Hollow World, which is kind of, I describe as Die Hard in Disney. And the main character in that is a detective named Charlie Walker. And so when I was writing Haps and the Disney Saboteurs, I knew I needed a head of security. And what I was picturing in my head was someone very much like Charlie Walker, just kind of a nice guy who was very smart, who had a great love of Walt Disney World. And I was like, why should I rewrite, why should I make a whole new character when I've already got a perfectly good one that Nick wrote? And from there, it was kind of like, oh, well, yeah, let's make this thing that I'm calling the Bambooniverse, which is kind of like, you know, Marvel's universe, where there's no need to reinvent a whole new superhero who has these specific powers when you've already got a perfectly good one running around in another story.
Right.
So let's just bring him into it. And so with Nick's blessing, I went ahead and did that. Now, I don't think you need to read Hollow World in order to understand it at all. But obviously, if you read Haps and you like it, then you want to go back and read Hollow World. Or if you read Hollow World and you like it, then you definitely want to go read Haps to find out what happens to Charlie Walker. But they're, again, like you can watch the Marvel films without seeing the other Marvel films, right, and they're definitely standalones, and that works really well. So, yeah, it was kind of just serendipitous that that happened. But I do think it worked out pretty well.
Oh, cool. Yeah, I think so. I am in the middle of reading the book, so we're not going to talk about spoilers because I don't want to get spoiled yet, but I wouldn't want our listeners to get spoiled too.
Yeah.
It's not an analysis of the book, if you will, but just a little taste I want to give everyone here. And one thing I have picked up on so far in my reading, which I think is great, is that it seems what's going on in the story is similar to what would be a secret organization of hardcore fans that want to destroy the attractions that all the hardcore fans really hate. So it's like a fantasy. Am I barking up the right tree? Is that kind of what you were going for?
Well, I'd always heard people say that. You know, it's like just there's this horrible attraction, and why doesn't it just get demolished to make way for something better?
Mm-hmm.
And you know, the thing that really set that off was the whole thing that happened with the Tiki Room under new management, and they had Gilbert Gottfried in there, and they'd taken down this really wonderful show and put Gilbert Gottfried in there and just made a really annoying show out of it. And then it kind of caught on fire. Oops. And and oh, well, wow, the old show came back. So, you know, people started speculating, well, maybe that was a deliberate thing. Maybe someone did that so that they would have to refurbish it, or maybe they couldn't afford to refurbish it back to the old one, but maybe if someone burned it down, they could get the insurance money that would allow them to refurbish it and put it back to the, you know. Yeah, so it's kind of like, so people started going, well, wouldn't it be great if there was an accidental fire in Stitch, you know, for example.
Right.
And then people were kind of like, they'd just joke around like it was the ghost of Walt Disney who was setting these fires, for example. And,
right.
And so I really dug that. Like it was kind of like fan fantasy type stuff. Like people just using their imaginations to come up with these funny stories for why these attractions had, why that attraction had gotten burned. And I don't know. Of course, something like that sticks in my head and stays there for a while, and I don't even think I realize it, but it's just turning into this big mythology.
Right.
By the time I'm ready to write a book.
No, that's cool. Yeah, I could see. That's why I figured that was kind of the inspiration, and then it took off to to deeper conspiracy levels than more than anything anyone's ever speculated.
So. Yeah. Yeah. Definitely. Yep.
So now, only in the book do you also obviously very detailed to Walt Disney World, and also keep a lot of the. I noticed in both your books, the characters seem to really carry the opinions that only hardcore fans have, which again makes it very real because it just seems like somebody that I know or that I hear on a podcast. You know?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, they're Disney fans. They're hardcore Disney fans. The main characters are. And Hapst was in janitorial for however many years. He was a janitor and loved the park and kind of saw it degrade before his eyes over the years, and you know, wasn't really happy about that. And in Our Kingdom of Dust, with Blaine, he had gone there a bunch with his parents, and it was kind of this Shangri-La for him. And once his parents died and everything went bad, he went back there hoping to just recapture that kind of lost innocence, and found that everything had changed and all the things he loved the most had been destroyed. And so for him, it was, as opposed to Hap's gradual seeing it degrade before his eyes, with Blaine, it was a complete shock to the system. He hadn't been there in so many years, and he goes there and everything's different. So I'm not sure which one's worse. It's almost like, you know, do you pull the Band-Aid off slowly or do you rip it off quickly? But either way, it sucks.
Right.
But yeah, I mean, obviously, as a child of the 80s, who went to Epcot all the time when it was in its prime, and Magic Kingdom too. Yeah, I mourn the loss of all these wonderful things that used to be there, and obviously that comes across in the main characters that I write. So people always ask if these characters are me, and with Blaine in Our Kingdom of Dust, it was a little more difficult to say no, even though he wasn't. But I think with Habst, I'm showing people that yes, I can write a character who's not necessarily me, but obviously they're going to have parts of me in them, as is every character in any of the books that I write.
Right, right. It's just little bits of your opinion,
yeah,
mixed with,
yeah, exactly,
the fantasy, which again, it I would say grounds in reality, but at the same time, the things that happen are so outrageous that it really just makes you really engaged. That's I keep going back to that. You're just like,
sure.
You know,
that's great.
So that's awesome.
Yeah, thank you.
No problem. So yeah, people want to find this book and any of your books, how do they go about doing that?
Well, they're all anywhere you can buy books, and Amazon and Barnes & Noble, iTunes, Kobo. If a good place to go is to go to bambooforestpublishing.com. And that's going to have kind of the list of everything that we've got out and any new releases. And I've got an online store that is linked from there where you can get signed copies of the books or signed prints from Rolly Crump, which are always sell out real quick. Yeah, like I've even got audiobooks out. The Our Kingdom of Dust, Dark Side Disney, and Hapst are all available through audible.com or iTunes. So if you don't have time to sit down and read, but you have a long commute, you can always go download it on Audible. Yeah, people really seem to dig that. I think that's something that a lot of the other Disney publishers just don't do. They don't take that extra step, but there's definitely a big market out there for it, and I appreciate it because I've got a commute of my own. You know, I'm either listening to podcasts like yours or I'm listening to books on tape. So it's definitely cool.
It's a great way to consume books. Are you reading these books?
Yeah, Our Kingdom of Dust and Hapst I did do myself. So I read those, and people seem to enjoy that. Dark Side of Disney was actually Tantor Media. They bought the rights to that and hired a guy named Jeffrey Kafer to do the narration. He's a professional audiobook narrator, and he did an excellent job of it, which is great because I didn't really have any interest in recording that one myself. And he's got a lot of personality, and to hear him read the stuff that I write is both hilarious and totally scary for me because
I can imagine, yeah.
Yeah, because I'm just like, it's kind of creepy because I wrote this the way that I talk, and when I read it myself, I hear my own voice reading it, and then to hear someone else reading my words, it's like, ooh. But I mean, he does an amazing job. He does way better job than I could have done, but it is kind of weird for me anyway. But yeah, so, and Rolly Crump, he didn't do an audiobook of his book, but what he has done instead is we've gone through and done more stories that weren't in the book. And so Jeff Heimbuch sits down with him and records him telling all these incredible stories that weren't in the book about working with Walt and working with the Imagineers. And we've been releasing those as a series of CDs called More Cute Stories. And people are loving those. So that's worth checking out too.
Excellent. Yeah, well, obviously people listening are into listening to audio, so there's some great choices for you.
Exactly.
But you can all get all that stuff at bambooforestpublishing.com.
Yep.
Excellent. So, I know you're still hot on the heels of Hapst, but what's next for you?
Oh, boy. Well, I got a lot of promotion to do for Hapst still, and there's some... there's some other things coming down. Obviously, we want to keep doing More Cute Stories CDs just because, I always told Jeff, even if they don't sell a single copy, I think it's so important to get documentation of these stories from people who have worked with Walt.
Mm-hmm.
And, Rolly's not getting any younger. So I want to keep putting those out. And we've got some stuff on the horizon that might not fall under Bamboo Forest, but we've got a girl who's writing like Disney erotica.
Really?
Yeah, yeah. And so I might make a separate imprint, like Bamboob Publishing. I don't know. Because it wouldn't appeal to all the people who read the Bamboo Forest books. I might make another imprint like that. So, but they're really good. So yeah, it's stuff like that. There's always something going on, and it's always something fun and exciting. So,
all right, cool.
Yeah.
Well, thank you for coming on the show.
You're very welcome, James.
Thanks to Leonard once again for coming on the show. You can find all of his books, everything he mentioned, his one-stop shop, bambooforestpublishing.com. Coming up in our next episode, Annie from Annie and Danny's Fast Pass podcast, a contributor of the show, will be hopping on. She'll be joining me as we continue going through the creepiest attractions. We have decided to go in a category, and right now we're going to be going through all the 3D shows attractions. Next up, Captain EO. So get ready for that. If you've got any questions, comments, concerns, requests, anything, shoot me an email, creepykingdom@gmail.com. You can follow me on Twitter @creepykingdom. And for show notes, videos, creepy Disney cosplay, fan art, pictures, links to all our social media, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, Google+, Tumblr, and Pinterest, all you gotta do is go to creepykingdom.com. Recently did a little redesign there, and I think it looks pretty snazzy. What do you think, huh? Yeah, I bet you do think it looks snazzy. I bet you do. We are in the iTunes store, where you can subscribe and get it, the show delivered directly to you automatically, and where you can leave us a review. 5 stars, preferably. And we're on the Stitcher application for your smart telephone. Stream podcasts directly to your phone. No downloading required. Stitcher.com. And before I get out of here, one last thing I want to say to you, the listener, is that I want to give a plug to a new podcast I've started and I am producing. It is the podcast of one of our past guests, pinup model Roxy Tart. She has started her own podcast called Roxy's World, and I'm producing it and co-hosting on some of the episodes, and we just went live. You can find her podcast on her website, which is roxy-tart.com, and then click on Roxy's World. You'll find it. She talks all about being an extra coming Gem in the Holograms movie, which is pretty cool. And there will be talk of Disney, as of course she is a huge Disney fan, and she's actually on her way to Disneyland for the weekend, so I'm sure the next episode will be all about Disneyland and what went on there. And I actually gave her some assignments to pick up to do some things for this show, so I said it now publicly, so hopefully she pulls through. I'm holding you accountable, Roxy. So anyways, yeah, check that show out because it's good times. Well, until next time,
keep it creepy. I have to go now. It is midnight. pleasant dreams.
Ha 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 ha